You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chickentown, this is the Flopcast episode 475.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
Ready for some more Backs of Life?
You betcha.
Going to present more backdoor pilots that, you know, to a largely indifferent nation. I don't think anybody cares that we're doing this, but we're kind of locked in at this point.
Well, that feels like pretty much every conversation I have, Kevin, so I'm used to this.
It's all we have. It's all we know how to do anymore. That's what we're doing today. Sorry. But before we get to the Backs of Life, everybody, Cornflake. Let's start properly with National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day!
Do you remember on the show, Kevin, when we were talking about mailing chickens in the mail once upon a time?
We had a conversation about mailing chickens. I don't specifically remember this, although I can't say I'm surprised.
We have discussed mailing chickens in the mail. That was something that was legally allowed starting, well, legal in the U.S. anyway, starting in 1918. That's when you were allowed to mail chickens. They had an interesting prototype for it beforehand, though, because you know what you were allowed to mail prior to chickens other than your standard letters in the mail?
Before you could mail a chicken, they tested it out by mailing skinks.
Close. It was children.
Oh.
So June 14th is Don't Put Your Kids in the Mail Day. And this is because back when the U.S. Postal Service started, obviously, postage was cheaper than, like, if you wanted to send a kid off to a relative, it was cheaper than sticking them on a train. And so people were sending their kids in the mail. And to be fair, the U.S. Postal Service took very good care of these small children, but it got to a point where it got a little too popular to do this. So
the post office knew that there were children in the crates?
Oh, they weren't in crates. You would just, the mail truck would drive up, and then your kid would get on the mail truck.
Okay. See, I picture the kid in a box.
Well, I pictured that too.
With maybe an air hole or two.
But it wasn't like that. The postal truck would come through and here's my kid, here's where they're going, and the postal service would drop the kids off. So this got more and more popular, and then finally on June 14th, 1913, all the major newspapers, they all ran stories stating that the U.S. Postmaster had finally decreed that children could no longer be sent through the mail.
I mean, there's Uber now and Lyft.
That's true.
So it takes some of the pressure off sealing your kids in crates, I suppose.
I mean, I think I would have loved hanging out in a crate with a bunch of bubble wrap. Maybe the kids get to ride on the conveyor belts when being sorted. I would have loved that. I mean, it's not like they were unceremoniously shoved into a canvas sack with the other packages. The U.S. Postal Service actually did pretty well ferrying these kids.
Oh, I'm sure they did a great job. I'm sure as many as 60% of the children actually reached their final destination. All right, keep your kids, mail your chickens, and just leave me alone. My advice to Americans everywhere, happy whatever day. Say, Cornflake, ready for some Backs of Life?
Yes, let's talk some Backs of Life.
So this is, of course, our ongoing series of shows looking at all the backdoor pilot episodes of the Facts of Life. And this is, I believe, Backs of Life Part 4.
That checks out.
So they did this over the whole run of the course of Facts of Life. They kept trying to launch spin-off series through these backdoor pilot episodes, and nothing worked. They never launched a new series out of Facts of Life, but they're fun to look at these weird little experiments anyway.
We're not going that much deeper, though, than the last Facts of Life we did. We're going deeper into the series by one episode.
By one episode, yeah. This is, as you said last time, this is back-to-back backs.
That's right.
They did two consecutive Facts of Life episodes were backdoor pilots. This happened in season three, because the last time we did this, we were talking about Facts of Life season three, episode 22. The very next episode, episode 23, was another backdoor pilot. This was on the calendar. This happened 2 weeks later. So apparently there was a week in between where they did not run a new Facts of Life episode. But this happened April 14th, 1982. And this backdoor pilot was titled Joe's Cousin.
Wait a minute. Weren't we just talking about a cousin of Joe's in the last Facts of Life?
Yeah, Joe has a lot of cousins.
Turns out.
So this time we have the show opens. Once again, we're back at Eastland, the girls' school, where we should be, just for like, I don't know, 45 seconds, top of the show. And Joe is getting ready to catch a train to go visit her relatives. I was amused by Natalie's line about the train being late because we're talking about Amtrak.
Yeah.
Just Natalie getting in there with a cheap shot at Amtrak.
It was a zinger.
I was very much amused by that. And that's it. That's all we see of most of the rest of the regular Facts of Life cast, because Joe is off on a train, and the scene shifts now to a gas station garage, where Joe's relatives are all working. And here's where we meet the Joe's cousin that the show refers to is Terry. She's 14 years old. This girl comes rolling out from under a car. Here's Terry.
Played by Megan Follows.
Cornflake, you may not have recognized Megan Follows, but I know you're a fan of this young lady because she was Anne in Anne of Green Gables. One of your favorites.
She looks so different.
Yeah, this would have been like 3 years earlier, right? Anne of Green Gables was 85.
No, I did not make the connection, Kevin.
Because several years ago, we did our 80s movie game, and on your movie list, which was a huge violation of the rules. It was a big scandal, remember?
I do.
People were furious because there was a lot of money riding on this. And then suddenly, in the movie list, you had a TV miniseries.
I did.
Oh, it was tied up in the courts for years.
I loved Anne of Green Gables. I just,
yes.
I never could remember what Anne's real life name was. She's so different in this. And as I was watching Terry on the Facts of Life, I was thinking, wow, this girl is really good. How come I never saw her in anything else?
Why isn't she in my favorite TV miniseries? Well, guess what? She is. Yeah, Megan, she was about 14 at the time of this Facts of Life, so her real age lines up with the character age in this case. She's a Canadian actress and worked a lot over the years, lots of stuff. Not much stuff in her credits really popped out at me. She did Anne of Green Gables, of course, as well as the sequels. There was a sequel series in 87 and then another sequel series in 2000. So many years later, she keeps coming back to being Anne. And her other credit that I noticed was she looks like she was a regular for a time on Wynonna Earp, which I've never seen, but I know it was a very popular show. And I believe she was a guest at Dragon Con just a couple of years ago. And I think it's probably because she was on Wynonna Earp, because I think they've done big Wynonna Earp cast panels and stuff at Dragon Con.
I can't believe it.
So that's Megan. You're a huge fan, even though you didn't realize it.
Yes.
I like how you first see her rolling out from under the car, though, because that's a thing. They love to do that in TV shows and movies. Somebody's working on the car, then they do the dramatic reveal as they come rolling out.
Yeah, it's a big reveal.
Yeah. So we've been watching like Taxi reruns recently, and you get that with Latka, you know, Andy Kaufman. Latka was always working on the cab, so he'd come rolling out on one of those, whatever you call those things, those scooters that you just ride under a car on. Did you ever use one of those? Have you rolled under a car?
I have not. Have you?
No, it looks kind of fun.
I would agree.
Except for the part where you have to work on a car.
Yeah, I'm not wild about that.
Yeah.
But I would love that when Latka rolled out from underneath the car and just see something random.
Yeah, and they do, like, isn't there a Bruce Springsteen video, I think, where he does that? I'm on fire, maybe?
Maybe we need to do like a top 4.5 rollout from underneath cars.
What about Billy Joel in Uptown Girl? Does he come rolling out on one of those? I don't remember.
Maybe he does, or somebody else in the video does, possibly.
It's always fiercely entertaining for some reason.
Well, it's fun to watch somebody else do it. I mean, you don't have to get on the ground yourself.
Nothing better than a filthy, greasy person rolling out from under a car, especially when it's not me. So here's Megan as Terry, Joe's cousin Terry. And then one by one, we start meeting the rest of her family, because here's old Sal.
Yeah, Donnelly Rhodes.
Yeah, he's the father, and then we get all their brothers. So here's the father, Sal Largo. And it's like an Italian family, right? Because Joe is Polish.
Right.
Joe Polnicek, but I guess this is the Italian side of the family.
Correct.
Because here's Sal Largo, yeah, played by Donnelly Rhodes. And Donnelly Rhodes, sadly, came up in one of our memorial shows a couple of years ago. I don't know if you remember, but he's one of those super familiar-looking guys because he acted in a billion things over the years.
Yeah, he seemed that way.
Yeah, as soon as you see him, he's like, oh, yeah, I've seen this guy before.
He's that guy.
Although you can't always place him. But two of his bigger credits that I know we mentioned on our memorial show, he died in 2018, but he was a regular on Soap, and then he was also on Battlestar Galactica. Not the 70s version, but the recent, the 2000s Battlestar Galactica series. He was the Doctor, so a long, impressive career. And then we get, she has a couple of older brothers as well, so they kind of make their appearances one by one. So here's Paul Largo. When I kept getting these guys mixed up. Like, she has two older brothers. I don't even know which is which.
Yeah, what was the point? They were so similar.
They might have, yeah, you know, good point. Why not just have one? I guess they wanted to be like the big Italian family, you know?
Or make them at least slightly different.
They could have tried to mix it up a little bit, not have two identical guys.
Yeah.
Good point. Paul Largo was played by John Mangatti. And he was a regular on The White Shadow. That would have been just a few years before this. And he was also one of the leads for our purposes. The most fun credit is he was Flash, Armand Flash Carducci in Meatballs Part 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which you and I suffered through a couple of summers ago.
Yes, we did. I knew he looked familiar.
Meatballs 2. This was the one with Richard Mulligan, Kim Richards, Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman is in it, John Larroquette, a bunch of familiar people.
I'm picturing him flying around a boxing ring now wearing a tutu.
And of course, Meathead the Alien. This was the Meatballs sequel that also had a little E.T. parody alien character.
Ugh.
It was not great cinema.
No, it wasn't.
But this guy was there. And the other brother, Bud Largo, played by D.W. Brown. I didn't see a lot in his credits that looked super familiar to me. The only thing I made a note of was he was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, the movie. And that would have been the same year. That was also in 82. So we've got Terry, we've got the father, we got the two brothers, and they're all just kind of, you know, yelling at each other, trying to be like a wacky Italian family. And then our final cast member arrives, and that's the brother's friend, Tony. He walks into the garage.
Oh, boy.
Terry is like leaning over the car, like working on something under the hood of the car. Tony comes in and like gives her a little, you know.
Yes. Wax her on the backside.
Yeah, you know, and then he says, oh, so I didn't know it was you. He was doing that thinking that it was one of the brothers.
It's like, why are you doing that to anybody?
He was like, I thought you were Paulie. Sorry.
I felt that, though, right through the TV screen, Kevin. I jumped when that happened.
Yeah, there are a lot of comments about, oh, you look just like your brothers, because she's kind of tomboyish. That was the concept.
Right.
But yeah, meanwhile, all right, it's a 14-year-old kid, and this guy, Tony, well into his 20s, the brothers and the friend, way older than Megan follows.
Yep.
Tony, played by Grant Kramer. Again, another guy who was in a million things. One of his bigger credits was Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which was sort of a cult favorite horror movie from the 80s, which I know I've seen once or twice. I could never get into it. I know people love this movie. Doesn't really work for me, but there it is.
Yeah, not my thing either.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space. That's clowns with a K, of course. And interestingly, on his IMDb, his most recent credit on IMDb is just announced. It's not out yet. It's just been announced. The return of Killer Clowns from Outer Space in 3D.
No. No way.
So,
wow.
Now, is this really going to happen? We'll see. But I kind of like that 30-something years later, he's returning to the Killer Clowns franchise. So good job, Grant Kramer. What I do remember Grant from is Hard Bodies. He was actually the star, the lead guy in Hard Bodies, which was one of those goofy 80s sex comedies. This was just a couple years later, 1984. It's just a bunch of goofy guys on a beach and there's, you know, girls and boobs and whatnot. One of those movies, you know. He was the star of Hard Bodies.
How many people did he slap in that one?
There was all kinds of things going on in that movie. The slap in the garage seems perfectly innocent.
By Hard Body standards.
Yeah. But there you go. That's Grant Kramer. Right, so there's your cast. And Joe shows up as well, of course. So here's Joe, and Nancy McKeon from Actual Facts of Life arrives in the garage to see her family. They're talking about how they're going to have dinner that night. I like the comment that's made, though, when they're talking about the dinner and the sauce and whatnot. And they say, you could be another Mama Celeste.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think of when I look at Donnelly Rhodes. Mama Celeste.
That took me back, though, because I'd completely forgotten about Mama Celeste.
I remember the little pizzas.
Yeah, that was the thing. There were commercials all the time for frozen pizza. It was Mama Celeste was the old Italian lady, and she made frozen pizza.
You can still get those, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I looked up Mama Celeste today, because evidently I had a little bit of time.
Yeah, I'll say.
Mama Celeste was for real. There really was an actual woman from Italy who came to America and started a pizza company and became this giant national frozen pizza phenomenon, but they used actual real Mama Celeste in those commercials.
That's really cool.
Now, the next question is, because I don't remember if I ever actually had Mama Celeste frozen pizza. I probably did, but do you remember ever having this stuff? Did you ever try it?
All through college, yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, because you could get one of those for under $1 and then stick it in a microwave.
All right, follow-up question, because in my experience, especially growing up, I'm talking 70s, 80s, frozen pizza was terrible. How was Mama Celeste pizza?
Oh, it was not a gourmet experience.
It didn't seem like your pizza had been made by an old Italian woman.
No, it did not.
In 1942? Probably not.
It was abysmal.
Yeah, frozen pizza was awful when I was a kid. I mean, don't get me wrong, I would devour the whole thing because it was still pizza.
Right. I'd still burn my mouth on it.
It's still pizza, so it's still pretty good. But what leaps and bounds we've made in frozen pizza technology, because you can get some decent frozen pizza pie these days.
Yeah, I would imagine that if Mama Celeste was still innovating today, she'd have the perfect pie.
Well, she's not innovating today. She's spinning in her grave over how bad her pizza was compared to the fantastic frozen pizza we enjoy today.
Poor Mama Celeste.
She considers it a personal attack, but I liked on this backdoor pilot Terry's father being compared to the late, great Mama Celeste. So as the garage scene winds down, the guys get ready to leave, and they announce that they're going to go check out the new chick at McDonald's because she deserves a break today.
I loved that. It was so cheesy, but I loved it so much.
You got to give them credit for working, working McDonald's slogan into their creepiness.
Yeah. It's creepy, but I mean, you just can't even take it seriously when you say something like that.
I hope Mayor McCheese was posted at the door watching for these creeps.
I'm sure he was.
I want Grimace and Hamburglar barricading the entrance because I'm trying to protect the new chick at McDonald's. Maybe the new chick was Birdie the Early Bird. Remember? This was around the time they introduced them.
Oh, good point.
Their new bird character to promote McDonald's breakfasts. All right, now we're jumping to the Largo household. And we're in Terry's room, and she's looking at a dress. She's thinking, I'm going to wear this dress tonight because it's my birthday dinner. So Joe's there. They're looking at her dress.
But they're still driving home the fact that she's a tomboy because she's the one girl I can think of that has a picture of a basketball player up in her room.
I had the same reaction. I was just looking at the basketball posters. It was real quick, but I think she had a Larry Bird poster and a Dr. J poster.
I think she did.
And I was a big fan of both those guys.
Which I thought was really, really cool, but that did not look like a girl's bedroom. So we're watching her and she's holding this blue dress up in front of her, trying to figure out how it's going to look on her. And I'm thinking, if there was a boy I liked coming to dinner when I was 14, that blue dress was so wholesome. I mean, it looked like something you'd wear on Little House on the Prairie, right?
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. That was a Laura Ingalls dress, yes. How does that compare to, like, is that similar to what Anne of Green Gables would wear?
Yes.
It was. Okay. I never saw Anne of Green Gables.
She may have very well taken that dress with her right on to the next set to go beyond Anne of Green Gables. But I'm watching her hold that dress up like, oh, this is going to be a real showstopper. And I'm thinking, her dad is so lucky that that's the dress she wants to wear to impress a boy.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they got nothing to worry about, because I can tell you that's not the dress I would have picked, Kevin, when I was 14.
Her garage overalls were way more revealing.
True. Very true.
When she was dressed like Latka back at the gas station. So anyway, they're puzzling over what she's going to do. Can she wear the dress? And then what about makeup? And then makeup, they're both completely stumped by. So now you bring in a ringer, you bring in an expert, they get Blair on the phone.
Blair is asking what shape face Terry has.
Yeah, Blair is like, okay, what's her face shaped like? Is it shaped like a heart or an egg? Do you know the answer to this, Cornflake? Because I have no idea. What do I look like, Cornflake? What's my face shape? My big Irish potato head. I think I just have a potato.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, mine is potato shaped.
Potato shape.
Yeah, what would Blair have to do with me? Do you think Blair has like special potato makeup?
It'd be contouring. Yes.
Blair could de-potatoify me?
Yes.
I don't know. The greatest challenge of her makeup career. All right, we jump down to the dinner table now, and she comes down and in her Laura Ingalls dress and shocks the family, of course, because they've never seen her wearing a dress before.
Yeah, it's treated as if it's absolutely scandalous. And here I am still thinking, it's not like some black slinky number or anything.
Absolutely.
And they're all freaking out.
They should be delighted that this is the dress she wants to wear.
That's what I kept thinking.
What they should not be delighted about, where I agree with the father, is that she's trying to hook up with Hardbody's dude.
Yep.
It's like she invites Tony over for her birthday dinner. So here he comes. Again, he's like 10 years older than her. He's a grown man.
Yep.
And this 14-year-old girl is very interested in him. And Joe seems to have no problem with this. She's like making sure they can sit together at the table. Tony offers to take her for a ride on his motorcycle.
Oh, yes. And in that dress?
Yeah, she's told, well, you can't ride a motorcycle in a dress. And so she says, that's okay, I'll take it off, which causes the father to start choking. What a scene. Meanwhile, I'm just all about get hard bodies out of the house.
Right.
This guy, the guy that's all hands, that is 2 years away from starring in a super creepy sex comedy, just keep him away from the 14-year-old girl, okay?
Yep.
But
imagine they were going to try to make a TV show out of this, Kevin.
This was the backdoor pilot. Yes. Anyway, everybody's freaking out. Hilarity ensues. And by the end, after Joe finally drags creepy Tony out the door, she's like, hey, why don't you go show me your motorcycle? So she gets him out of the picture. So now we're left with the girl and the brothers and the father. And they all seem to be slowly coming around on the idea that she's growing up and maybe we should let her. Then the phone rings. And it's a call from a boy. There's a boy on the phone looking to talk to Terry. She gets on the phone, and we just see the father and the brother like leaning in to listen in on what in the world's going to happen next. And we roll credits. Now, as we were watching this last night, Cornflake, the mayor of Chickentown was concerned that that was Tony on the phone.
I was too.
Yeah, well, I don't think it was, though, because I think they mentioned that they were still planning to go check out the McDonald's girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tony was not by a phone at this time. He's on his way to harass...
harass some poor girl at McDonald's.
Minimum wage girl wearing a paper hat selling fillet of fish down the street. So theoretically, presumably, hopefully, this was an age-appropriate boy from Terry's class is calling. Let's hope.
Yeah. Tony can go get a Happy Meal somewhere else.
Maybe it was one of the guys from Bates Academy.
That'd be so nice.
But that's where things left off. And I was thinking that the kind of wacky Italian cliche family that you see a lot of in these kinds of sitcoms or attempts at sitcoms, we have suffered through a lot of this over the years. And there was a show back then that only lasted a handful of episodes called Mama Maloney, because I used to watch this thing. This was like mid-80s. It was dreadful.
I don't remember this.
It was a big old Italian mama, like a Mama Celeste type. You know, maybe she was secretly dreaming of a frozen pizza empire. And Mama Maloney hosted a TV cooking show. So it's a sitcom, but you're watching her cook and talk to the camera, and meanwhile her actual family comes in and out of the scene, and she's interacting with them for, like, the sitcom plot of the week. It was very strange. Mama Maloney, not around for long. But I remember that. There was also the Tortellis, which was a spinoff from Cheers.
That I feel like I remember.
Yeah, that was Carla, you know, the waitress on Cheers. Carla's wacky ex-husband, Nick Tortelli, who was married to the tall blonde Jean Kasem, Casey Kasem's wife. They did a spinoff called the Tortellis with the two of them plus all their wacky kids. That did not last long. Then in the early 90s, I remember there was the Finelli Boys. And that was like an old lady, and she had all her full-grown sons still lived with her. That was a sitcom. None of these things lasted long. They were all disasters.
Yeah.
But they lasted longer than Joe's cousin. I guess you gotta give him that. All right, Cornflake, that was Joe's cousin. It's time to rate this thing on our patented 2D scale.
This is where the 2Ds come in.
How are you going to rate this backdoor pilot, Joe's cousin, on a scale of 1 to 10 2Ds?
I'm going 2 2Ds for this.
Ooh, wow. Super low. That is our lowest score in the history of the Backs of Life. 2 2Ds.
And that's saying something because I do like Megan Fellows a lot.
This is your girl. This is Anne of Green Gables.
That's the only reason there's 2 2Ds at all.
She got them up to a 2.
Yes, she did. How about you?
I get that. I completely respect that. Now, that said, of course, I loved it because I love every ridiculous episode of Facts of Life. It's vaguely Joe-centered, which was cool. You know, we love Nancy McKeon.
That's fair.
Strong cast overall. I mean, the brothers, you know, who cares, whatever. But, the, you know, the father was good. The girl is great. I like the scenes that we get with Joe and with Blair. So I think I'm gonna go maybe one higher than you and give it a 3, sort of a pity 3. I feel like I should go 2, just like you.
I like your point though about Nancy McKeon though, because there are some fine Joe moments in this episode. I would argue, however, that the rest of the episode didn't have to happen.
We could have just watched Joe on the Amtrak for a half hour.
I would have enjoyed that.
Yelling at annoying passengers around her. That would have been even better. But this is what we got. You're going 2 2Ds. I'll go 3 2Ds. Pretty low scores, but still, yeah, I mean, we're grading on a curve. It's still the Facts of Life, so it's still pretty great.
Yes.
All right, Cornflake, anyway, that concludes another round of the Backs of Life. And you know what? I think we can just go ahead and wrap things up right now. Get us out of here.
Okay, well, we gotta tell everybody where to find us between shows. There's flopcast.net, facebook.com/flopcast, on Twitter, @flopcast, on Instagram, the_flopcast. On Apple Podcasts, you can leave us a rating and or a review. We'd love both. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Yeah, you know, Blair showed up at a Sponge Awareness Foundation concert once, and she said that our faces were shaped like sponges.
Accurate.
That was very, very accurate.
She was on to something.
Yes. Cornflake, thanks for another festive Flopcast Backs of Life episode. Everybody, thanks for tolerating our year-long march through the history of Facts of Life backdoor pilots. We've got a bunch more of these to get through, so hang in there. And of course, meanwhile, be safe, be good, be kind, be silly. Remember, the Backs of Life are all about you, and we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Time to grab your pillow and join the Geek Father in Little Bit for discussions on current, nostalgic, and speculative happenings in pop culture. Nerd news, fandom histories, deep dive discussions, reviews, and more. It's like listening to your closest friends have a nerdy conversation. So sit back, relax, and let the Blurred Nerds podcast embrace you with their warm, goofy goodness. It's Nerd Goals for your ear holes, right here on the ESO Network.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Hello, everyone. Dr. Geek here with a shout-out to all the scientists who worked tirelessly to bring a COVID-19 vaccine into reality. And let's face it, creating something of this magnitude is a miracle worthy of Dr. McCoy himself. And now, Dr. Geek needs you to do your part. Remember, each shot is one small step back to normal, one giant leap to putting the pandemic behind us. We can do this. For more information, visit vaccines.gov to find your nearest provider.
Cornflake, this is our secret after show.
Hi.
What's going on?
I have a measure now, Kevin, of just how out of it I've been recently. Brace yourself here.
You're so out of touch that right now Hall & Oates just want to break into song.
If they can come up with a song about this, I would be impressed. So the other day, I'm brushing my teeth with my fancy enzymatic toothpaste. Have you heard of enzymatic toothpaste before?
Nope.
I'm looking through my boxes of like beauty supplies, and I find, oh, I don't remember purchasing this enzymatic toothpaste. Oh, but it's vanilla mint. Mm. I'll give it a shot. And there's both English and French writing on the box. You know, dentrifice, enzymatique. Oh, fancy, fancy toothpaste. I've been using this for months, Kevin. I didn't read the rest of the box.
Huh.
So this morning, I'm probably going to have to order some more of this soon. I know. I start looking at the box and I read it says animal health.
Uh-huh.
For the past several months, Kevin, I've been brushing my teeth with dog toothpaste and I didn't realize it. And now that I look more closely, not only does it say animal house on the box, it also says for veterinary use only. And there's a picture. It's not just for dogs. Evidently, you can use it for cats as well. There's a picture of a dog and a cat on the box.
All right. Okay, let's slow down because I want to enjoy this. For months.
For months.
Have you been riding out the pandemic just in a in the back of a veterinary supply room?
Yes.
Have you noticed that you're foaming at the mouth more than usual?
Literally.
Wow.
It's not bad, by the way. It's pretty good stuff.
Do you tend to stock up on most supplies for the medicine cabinet at a Petco?
That's got to be where I'm going wrong.
That might have been where... When you go to the dentist, do they, like, hold you up and you get on the scale together? Was that a red flag? That maybe something's not right?
They take the muzzle off and then they inspect my teeth.
So many questions.
They work around the flea collar. It's fine. It's all fine.
You're looking around the waiting room. Like, everybody else seems to bring their pets here. Why don't I? So many clues that something was not right. Now, do you feel that you've been getting a proper toothbrushing? Is this an inferior product? Is it equivalent? Is it superior to a human marketed product? Are you onto something? Should we all be using dog toothpaste?
I looked it up on Chewy today. It actually costs more than what a normal tube of toothpaste would cost for you or myself. So this is high end.
Could this just be a scam? Do you think this is the exact same stuff? Like at the Crest warehouse, there's just one giant vat. And some of it gets labeled for humans. And some of it
gets labeled.
They triple the price and ship it to crazy dog owners.
It's different, but I'm going to go ahead and say that it's better.
You keep doing what you're doing. Whatever you're doing, it's working.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.